What is up, everybody? Tony here with the Patio Slave Podcast, episode 22, August 5th, 2020, which is kind of crazy. Also kind of crazy, we're at 22. I'm here with Tuan and Nate. How you guys doing tonight?
What's good, guys? We got a cool episode. We'll kind of tease that in a little bit, but I'm doing good, man. Midweek, earlier than usual, but it breaks up the week.
Yeah, I agree with you. Midweek podcast, kind of. It's like a midweek hangout. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I appreciate you guys moving it to midweek. I'm getting married this weekend, so we pushed it up a little bit so we could get the episode in still, because we have podheads out there that want to hear us, man. I mean, that's the case.
That's the name of the game.
37 states now, and the District of Columbia, and 28 countries and Puerto Rico. So pretty crazy stuff.
And climbing. It's awesome.
And climbing, yeah, every week. So yeah, in lieu of like giving you the set list like we usually do, we're just gonna jump right into it. You guys saw that Spotify stuff last week, right? With the CEO saying, give us more music. We want to stream more music so we make more money off of you guys.
Yeah, I did see that. His whole thing was like this continuous output model where the old way of doing things where you record every, what, 2 or 3 years, that's out the bag. This continuous release cycle, which you're seeing some artists kind of already do that. I feel like the Drakes of the world. I feel like Post Malone does that. Like half the album comes out before it drops. And then Russ, the hip-hop rapper dude, he used to do this on SoundCloud where he would just release a new song every week. But I think he's missing the mark a little bit. What do you think, Nate?
Yeah, totally. Especially if you look at it in terms of like a legacy artist that notoriously takes time to get some kind of inspiration or not, I mean, essentially just not burn out, you know, because you're touring off the record, you're writing for the record. You have to be inspired to make art. So therefore, if it's just churning it out, well, that's the stuff that people can either A, point the finger and say, well, that seems pretty rushed or not something I'm into. And for a legacy band to just like do that out of necessity, they'll either lose fans or the music quality will just, you know, will just be a downgrade. So yeah, it was really difficult to read.
So a couple things come to mind for me. First off, this sounds like a money grab from Spotify. Like they want more music. They want more people driven to the app. They want more people checking out like, okay, Taylor Swift put on another song or Drake put on another song. I'm going to go and listen to that today. For me, and I think you guys are similar, and we're a little older, and that might be part of the reason, but we grew up with the album for the most part, and, you know, our favorite bands taking 2 to 3 years to put out a new album and getting, you know, that release day coming and going and listening to the whole thing and consuming music that way, this flies in the face of that, right? Like, this is what they call a continuous music experience, I'm putting in quotation marks, where, you know, maybe week to week you see a new song every other week and maybe at the end of it you get the full album, but it's like you didn't get to listen to it as a cohesive musical unit and it didn't come together for that artist to do it that way. So that's the first thing that pops into my head as far as like the consumption of music. I don't necessarily want it that way. I like to get a full album from a band that I love that has, you know, spent 3, 4, maybe sometimes 5 years to put that out, and there's been some blood, sweat and tears into it, as opposed to just here's a song and I listened to it twice, and then it just kind of out of sight, out of mind. I never hear about it again. What do you think, Swan?
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. So, like, even in the traditional way of doing things in 2020, where, you know, they do put out the album largely in a cohesive unit, but they do a single beforehand. Well, I always skip that single when I listen to the full album. Not always, but a lot of the times. But then I think about, like, Hum's new album, Inlet. That is a body of work. And that's a band that's going to say, well, fuck you, Spotify CEO. I'm not doing that. And if that means I'm not going to play the game to, you know, really pass revenue to you, then so be it. So I think you're going to have a lot of true musicians that are just going to do their own thing. But, you know, the Post Malones of the world, yeah, they'll play by these rules because they'll have fans showing up Thursday night at midnight or Friday at midnight, whatever you want to look at it, to listen weekly, and it'll work. It does work. But, and the other thing I thought about is, like, for these weekly releases, is there even a visual? Because, like, back in the day, even a CD single had its own cover. Like,
yeah, I think it's probably easier for the artist nowadays to put a cover on a single for a digital platform, but that physical media obviously is going to be, you're never going to see that in a physical form.
Right.
And we grew up with physical forms. We grew up with going into the record store, picking up a CD and buying it at the counter and bringing it home. It's transitioned as our life has gone on, but I think it will work for some. I'm not sure it's going to work for everybody. I think your big major players, if they want to do it this way, they'll make money. If they want to do it their way, where they put an album together every year and a half or 2 years and then tour on that album when we can get back to that and then do it again, that'll also work for a big, you know, it'll work for a Drake to do it that way. It'll work for Taylor Swift to do it that way or Post. But your middle of the road or your up and comers where, I mean, what do they always say about some of those up and coming bands? It took them their whole life. So 18 to 25 years to write that first banger of an album. And then they got to turn around and make that next one in the next 2 years. And it's never as good as the first one. Not always, but a lot of times that second sophomore slump album happens.
Yeah.
This is just asking you to have a continuous loop. Just make more music, make more music, make more music. We don't care if it's good. We just want people to click. I don't like that.
Yeah, no, totally. It's an emphasis on mass production, which we all know the music industry is notorious for mass production in terms of pressing copies, CD sales, and RIAA certifications and so forth. But that's units sold in terms of trying to translate that into the creative process and say, hey, and the tone of the interview was basically like, yeah, like almost that, like some kind of like a entitlement, you know, vibe to it, where it was like, no, that's not the case. Cause if you're an artist, you have that, it takes time to be inspired. So therefore I think he's a little disconnected on that end for sure.
Yeah. I think at the end of the day though, the sad reality is he is right. Like he's totally right. Like for you to thrive in this environment, and maybe it came across wrong, but he's right in that for you to thrive in this environment, you're going to have to continuously put out music. And like you said, it's going to be the Beyoncés. It's going to be the artists that just have a whole team of people. A band can't keep up. Will they physically play? They have a backing band and they play their instruments. They can't keep up with this because you got to go in the studio. You got to track. You got to mix, master, whatever. This caters to hip hop, really, the more I think about it.
Yeah, yeah. Hip hop does turn around quicker than a lot of the other stuff. I will disagree with you a little bit, because today in Corona times, this won't work, because if you're going to be a viable artist, you're going to be that Beyonce, that Taylor Swift, that Drake that can go and fill up those massive stadiums, and that's where they make their money. This isn't going to work because they can't do that. So it might be a way for them to get streams, but they're not making a ton of money on those streams. Spotify is the ones pulling the money down on that, or Apple Music or YouTube or whatever. But they're getting paid pennies on the dollar for what they did. If they aren't able to go out and put a physical tour together where they can have visuals and have live music and have meet and greets and sell merch and do all that, they can't do that with this today. So that becomes, I'm not sure this is viable today for that the way it is. If we go back to being able to go to big venues to see concerts again, which who knows when that's going to be. Yeah, you're right. The bigger bands will do what better with us. Your Pearl Jams and whoever that has a set group of people together that can put all these pieces into play. But right now, you're stuck at home and you're making an album with somebody else over the internet, and you're going to put it on Spotify and maybe get, yeah, you'll stream a lot, but how much of that money are you seeing?
But there are intangibles that come with being at the top of the charts. It allows you to fill that arena. It allows you to fill.
True.
It puts you in front of more eyeballs. So I don't know. And it's always a guessing game of like how much they actually get from the streams. I mean, there's data online and some service providers pay better, but you don't know their contract or if they own their masters and all that. But in the aggregate, oh yeah, only like the Post Malones actually make good money from streaming, I'm sure.
Yeah. And Post Malone's a relatively new artist, so it caters to someone that's, you know, independent essentially, and has been able to adapt to maybe this new model, or the new model that's pressuring people to churn out music faster. And it's like, well, yeah, you can for someone like Post Malone. If Jimi Hendrix was alive right now, he'd be like, there's no way I can do this right now. You know, I'm just put out a bunch of crap basically.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's an interesting thing, and I do think you're right. He probably got misquoted and clickbaited to hell on Twitter, right? Like, it probably was more of a, hey, guys, if you want to be in the conversation, you got to continuously be doing things.
Exactly. That's what I think that's his intent.
Yeah, and that makes sense, right? I mean, that's how things are today. If you want to keep the attention of people, you've got to keep one-upping yourself and doing new things and being in the forefront of everybody's, you know, consciousness, on top of the fact that that will make him some money. You know, like it is a double-edged sword. That was there too. He wasn't just saying it because he thought, I want to help all these people. He was saying it because this also helps me too, so go ahead and do it.
And it also, do you think there's a correlation with their big play with podcasts? So podcasts, continuous output. So you can see where his mind is, because that's the podcast model. Every week, loyal fans, tune in.
2, 3, 4 times a week, right?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nuts.
I can't imagine doing it. We do one a week, and it's we spend a lot of time on it. Like, I've tried doing this daily.
We need a fourth person that
this
behind the
or
scene.
This would be our job.
Yeah,
this would be all we did, and that's right now obviously not feasible for us. But you know, maybe someday.
I mean, that might be when Setla comes into the picture.
Yeah, Setla. He's in the corner right now. I see him. Hey, buddy.
Nice.
He's just typing on his phone. I don't know what he's doing over there, but yeah. So that was an interesting. That was the big play, and that happened right as we were getting ready to record last week, and we had thoughts about it then, but we wanted to kind of come at you proper with those, and it was interesting. It definitely made sense. What was the second thing we had on the set list tonight? The
second thing was kind of a piggyback from last week. So we talked about Port City Music Hall closing in Maine, and yeah. I think it was you, Nate, that you mentioned something about pressing. You mentioned pressing. A band could press vinyl or put out music to help support a venue. Well, this week we saw a headline.
Yeah.
A brewery in the UK is donating a portion of the proceeds to Venue Relief. And I think, was it tied to Frank Turner somehow, or did he just promote it? Or?
He's the one that posted it. It was a UK brewery. I'll find it. But yeah, it was, portions of the sales were going to help the venues in the UK, similar to what we have here with the Venue Relief that they're trying to get passed in Congress. But this was just a brewery saying, yeah, hey, buy our beer, and some of the money is going to get tossed to that venue fund. Because I mean, they're probably taking a hit not having people going out and buying beers that way, right? So they want venues to open back up too.
Yeah, and it kind of just parlays into, you know, people are already buying beer, you know, here in California for the fires up in near Chico and Paradise, California. All the breweries, including Sierra Nevada, started a coalition to raise money for those wildfires, and you know, is extremely successful because everyone, you know, is a beer lover, is also a lover of the woods and in California state. So for music, I feel like that is a good play. It goes hand in hand. We were talking about beer and music collaborations in terms of just licensee deals. And so this is even more grassroots because it's helping keep the live scene alive somehow.
The brewer, the beer is called Fight Back Lager, and it was
nice.
It was put out in 2017 to aid the battle for the survival of grassroots music venues anyway. So this was already a thing for them. So this goes hand in hand with what's going on today. So that makes sense.
Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah, I don't know how big the brewery is, but I guess, I mean, that doesn't even really matter. It's the intent. I just hope there's enough money to go around. Because like you said, I know breweries in the States are having to get creative in terms of delivery and things like that to keep afloat. So I assume some of them can't even spare that. So good on these guys for doing that. And I'm sure every penny helps these venues.
Well, and this just lends me to the thought where I should be able to order something online and have it sent to my house, no matter where it's from. I would buy this beer right now to help support independent music venues anywhere in the world, because it's such a passion of ours. I would love to be sipping a Fight Back right now talking about this story.
Oh, yeah.
But I can't because it's in the UK and, you know, taxes and tariffs and all that bullshit, sending stuff across alcohol in a boat somewhere to my house. That's hard. But someday we'll be able to do that. And we're doing it a little bit more nowadays. Like you said, Tuan, local breweries here, and I'm sure the same thing is present in California. They're bringing they're delivering beers to houses as opposed to people coming to get it from them. So it's going to continue to do that.
Yeah, the constant pivot. And distribution is only getting better and better, you know, love or hate Amazon. I don't know if they'll ever be in a capacity to legally send alcohol. But if they did, that would be a game changer. I'm sure they're looking into it. But yeah, man, same. I mean, I remember speaking of like music collection and collabs and licensee deals. This is a little tangent off the side, but Foo Fighters put out a beer in Australia, and it was like a special release, and I tried to order it, and I even like, you know, talked to the brewery directly, and they're like, sorry man, we can't send it to you. I wish we could. I'm like, crap. So,
and you just wanted it as a fan.
I would have bought it. Yeah. So yeah, it gets complicated, but good on them for doing that. Cool way to raise money.
Yeah, no, I like these types of stories. If I'm still working and I can support these artists, I'm going to do that, or support the venues and such like that. I'll do that.
Yeah, totally.
We have one more mini set list item right before we get to our segment.
Yeah. So it was an album anniversary
today.
Was it today? Nice. It was actually today. So what's today? The 5th, August 5th.
Yeah.
1997.
23 years old today. 311's Transistor.
Nice.
So Nate, you start, because I know you ride the hardest.
I need Nate on this one.
You ride the hardest for this one, for this album.
Absolutely. It's my favorite 311 album.
Ooh, wow.
I know. It's bold.
Scalding hot take.
Trust
it really
me,
is, though. It's great.
Well, there's a lot of good ones. Trust me. Like, there's a few others that are kind of top contenders with their, I wouldn't even say, because it's a future episode, I think. But but I remember as a kid, like, grabbing this album, and it was like a value thing. Oh, I get this many songs for this price. It seems so rare, you know? Like, the only other albums I could think of that came out with this many songs is like Tom Petty's Greatest Hits also had like 19 songs or 21 songs or something. Transistor Tone, what is it at? 17 songs, I think?
Oh, is it more? I think it's more than that. Is it 20, 20 or 21?
It's a long album.
Hang on. I got it right here. I'm looking it up. Oh, no, that's not what I wanted.
Okay.
Just joking. I'll find it.
But it's also around the time that I got into 311, at least like heavy. And I was like, oh, it's something for rad. So it has that connotation. And then it's kind of like it's got this weird stony ethos to it, which I really like. In fact, when I was up in Lake Tahoe last week, I played this album front to back as I was driving around and, you know, in nature. Oh, what?
21 songs.
Oh, damn.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And yeah, there's some really good songs on this album. I mean, I put it on today in the car. I got maybe 6 or 7 songs into it before. I mean, it's 21 songs, so I didn't have that far of a drive. I wasn't driving to Bangor. So, but yeah, Transistor, great song. Prisoner, great song. Beautiful Disaster, probably my favorite 311 song.
Wow, that's a hot take.
Yeah, no, I love that song. And there's some great 311 songs, but that is probably my favorite 311 song.
You skipped Galaxy, man.
Galaxy's good, not my favorite.
Yeah.
I mean, to each their own, right? And even Stealing Happy Hours to close out is a great song.
Such a good song. Electricity, Use of Time.
Electricity, yeah. Use of Time. Use of Time might be up there too, actually.
Yeah.
What was I thinking?
Think, Juan?
Yeah. So.
Oh yeah. Good call.
Self-titled came out 96. What year was it?
95. July of 95.
July 95. So I got into them during that album. So I'm legitimately 10, 11 years old, super young. And this was the follow-up, correct?
Yes.
In 97. So I remember when this came out, I was probably 12 or 13. Didn't like it. It was super sleepy, especially the back half of it. And after this was Sound System?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So 4 years. No, Sound System was 99. So a couple years later.
99. 2 years later.
Yeah. So they go from this sleepy album, in my eyes, to Sound System, which was super upbeat. That album's a total vibe. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until later on where I revisited Transistor and I was like, this album, it's a lot better than I give it credit for. And then since we started this podcast, Nate, I know you ride for this album. I listened back to this, so in the last 5 months or whatever, great album. I don't think I'd put it up there with Self-Titled or Music or Grassroots or Sound System, but I think it's fifth. I think it's in fifth. I don't think it's as good as From Chaos.
They had such a run, though.
Yeah, they
like,
did. Yeah.
From Music to probably From Chaos, right?
Yeah.
Like a 12-year or 13-year run of just most albums with really good songs on them. If you're a fan of this genre, a fan of this music, and this actually will play into our segment a little later, too. It's for me, it's a little long. It doesn't need to be 21 songs, but there are some really good bones in there, and there's some really awesome songs in there. And if it was a 12-song album, it would be one of their best.
Yeah, you think? I kind of like that it drags out.
I don't hate it because it is a departure a little bit from, you know, Self-Titled into Sound System. It's that, like, in-between, interstitially type thing. But at the same time, if they were to just cut the fat and yeah. put out a 12 song, this could be almost a, close to a greatest hits. There's so many good songs on it for them.
Yeah. So. And it's funny because you were mentioning those albums, Twan, and I think that's what Sound System is the tight, you know, 12 song, every song's amazing, and it's kind of has a concept to it. But I feel like Transistor also has a concept to it too. So they're almost like polar opposites.
Yep.
So when I said favorite album, I had like Sound System in my head. I'm like, Sound System's really good. So I don't know. Could be tied. But
they just had a great run.
Yeah, they really did.
And the CD, the imagery of the CD cover is perfect.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good.
Yep. They were really good with that for a while. I mean,
yeah.
The imagery of music, that's kind of a weird cover. Same with probably Grassroots. It's cool, but it's weird. But like self-titled to From Chaos, just some awesome. Yep. They like hit their stride as far as the imagery that went along with the music.
Yeah.
There's one later on that's really bad. I think it's Mosaic. It's just like them on the cover.
I don't even know if I've seen the cover of that one. Digital. This is what happens nowadays.
It's just them. Yeah, it's like a little it's a mosaic. It's like the little photos, and it makes up them just standing there under the logo.
Yeah. The logo is badass. I mean,
yeah.
We all love the logo.
Yeah, logo's sick.
And then Universal Pulse is like, looks like they're on a psychedelic trip or something.
Yeah.
The one, what's the one after From Chaos?
Evolver.
Evolver? That, yeah.
Which is like the cover of, they were trying to do like a Revolver thing with that, a Beatles kind of homage, I think.
Oh, okay.
Which is weird because they're nothing lobby. Like that.
In the,
yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
I never liked
weird because they're nothing like that. I mean, they're kind of a stonery, reggae vibe band, right?
Hip hop reggae.
Yeah. that might be coming soon. Fuck the naysayers. All right, that was the set list. It's short tonight. We've got a cool segment for you guys, which I failed to mention in the open because I forgot. But here it is. We threw out on Instagram yesterday. Was that when we did it tomorrow?
Yep.
Yeah, that we wanted to do a mailbag episode in the near future, and we got a ton of questions, so we figured we'd just do it tonight. They were all really cool. They got us thinking. So we have some questions we want to answer for you guys, the listeners, that have hit us up online in multiple platforms. I'll read the first one. Mike from Texas. Mike from Texas says, when discussing music from the early 2000s or 90s, I hear you guys say it still holds up a lot. What are some songs, artists that you feel don't hold up from that time frame? So who wants to lead off with that one?
I'll go.
Which one?
Right. Yeah, so I thought about this one, and you know, I couldn't really pinpoint a song or artist, so it's really a genre of music, and that for me, it's nu metal. And
stole mine.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think back. Like, nu metal came out with like what, probably Korn in '94, but like it hit our stride in like '97, '98, and you got to remember, for us, that was like the introduction to metal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I almost equate it to like your first beer is Bud Light, and you think it's fucking amazing. And it works. It gets the job done. And then as time goes on, you try the IPAs and you're like, well, that Bud Light isn't that good. So I guess closing comment, the more I think about it, take a band like Soulfly. I think a Soulfly for me fits this question, Mike, in that you hear Soulfly when you're 13, you think this is awesome. And then like 2 years later, you hear Sepultura, which features those same members, and you're like, well, this is way better. Why would I listen to Soulfly? you know?
That's fair. That's a good way to put it.
If we were 35 in the late 90s, we wouldn't have even probably paid any attention to nu metal, I don't think. But since we were of that time, and a lot of it does still hold up, but some of it doesn't. So I would say nu metal.
You want to go, Nate, or you want me to go?
Yeah, why don't you go? I was going to say, well, I'll just say.
Go ahead, just say it.
I was going to say, if it's like one band, Mike, I don't know. Chumbawamba, maybe?
Yeah, that definitely doesn't hold up.
Yeah. You know, but when it came out, it was rad. I was like, this is awesome. But now I'm like, man, no, I don't know.
I actually didn't like it when it came out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, no, I was too cool for school back then. No, Twan, what you said makes a lot of sense to me. And I semi-agree with you, and I also semi-disagree with you, because there's stuff from that era that I still play regularly.
Yeah.
So, like, Head PE I love and still want to listen to albums from that era that are straight-up rap rock, straight-up nu metal type albums. I think they're their best. So those get spins from me occasionally still. We've talked about Limp Bizkit on this pod. I know for me, Significant Other and Hot Dog Flavored Water, which is a terrible name for an album, and there are pieces of that album that suck, there are songs on both of those albums that I still want to hear today. So maybe that's because I was, 13 when they came out. That's probably why. But you're right. I think if I was 30, if that music came out today, I'd probably be like, this is garbage. Like, what? why does anybody care that this is, why is this big? Like, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
But yeah, you're probably right. It is probably that. And we're not shitting on nu metal, because there's a lot of nu metal that we still like, and we still listen to bands that came from that era, maybe started there, that are still making music today that we still love. So it's not a complete dismissal of the genre, because the genre is great to an extent. There was a lot of industry plants back then. We've talked about how there was a lot of music and money in that music back then, and a lot of bands that came out of that were not very good. So what do you think, Nate?
No, I agree. I think you're right. And then, Tuan, you brought up a really good point, because the nu metal thing gets, so much, gets so much shit from so many people, because if they didn't understand or weren't in that era, I can see, trying on the outside looking in, this music is hard to digest, especially, Roland by Limp Bizkit, eek, that's pretty bad. But if you don't know Limp Bizkit roots, you wouldn't even be in the band you wouldn't be into them in the first place.
Right.
I wouldn't get into Limp Bizkit on Roland. I'd be like, this band sucks. So in terms of what doesn't hold up, I think I can pinpoint songs, bands. It's a little bit harder. I think maybe because we're such big fans of music that we give everything a chance, and there's some kind of emotional connotation to whatever, even some crappy music, So, I tried to say what doesn't get the time or what doesn't stand the test of time, but, I'm just trying to think as super, super grassroots growing up with music. It's what doesn't hold up? This is more of a joke. Is any of the music you learned in elementary school as band, chorus, Bahu Boris, Dahu Doris, what are these songs we're singing? What's going on? Those songs don't hold up.
Those don't hold up. Yeah. Yeah.
Not as much.
Thinking about this question just right now, in more in depth, but while you guys are saying things about it too, it makes me think I don't remember a lot of what didn't hold up because I didn't come back to it. So
yeah.
I bet if I went through my music library on iTunes and pulled some songs or artists out, I would find some stuff that I was like, yeah, I don't ever touch that again. It's been years since I've listened to that, but yeah, I just don't come back to that stuff. So it's not top of mind for me.
Yeah,
that's true. Trapped.
will, what was it 5 months ago or 4 months ago, I was like, yeah, guys, I listened to the self-titled Trap the other night. I actually still like it. I was drunk. I was clearly drunk. All right. We ready for question number two? Good question, Mike. Thank you.
Yeah. I'll get us going on this one. So this one comes from Ted in Michigan. He actually sent in two questions. So we'll start with this first one. He asks, best Stone Temple Pilots album, Purple or Tiny Music? Lots of good debate to be had on this one. Can I make a comment?
Yes, because I think you're going to make a similar comment to me.
Best Stone Temple Pilots album isn't either of these. It's Core.
Is it Core? Or Four? Yeah, Four or Core. I think you could have an argument for both.
But we'll stick to, this, these two. So, Nate, do you ride for Purple or Tiny Music?
I think I'm going to go... I was listening to both albums today, and I'm like, oh man, they're both so good. And I agree with you, Tuan and Tone. Sorry, Ted. I don't know if it's the third best. But I think I'm going to go Purple.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think for me, of these two, it's probably Purple. There are songs on Tiny Music I love, though.
I know.
But if I had to pick of these two, it's Purple. Tuan, you said Core, right?
Core, yeah.
See, I actually like Four. I think Four is better than people give it credit for.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying it's their best album, but you could say, what's your favorite Stone Temple Pilots album? And you're going to get Core, you're going to get Tiny Music, you're going to get Purple, and you're going to get Four. You're going to get those from everybody.
Yeah.
There are just people that are going to pick those. So for me, it's probably Purple. It's hard, though. It's very hard. Vaseline's such a great fucking song. An Interstate Love Song is obviously iconic for them. Mm-hmm. Big Empty, another great song. It's tough. It's tough to not pick Purple.
Yeah, out of these two, Purple gets the nod from me. But I will say, my sister, a couple years older than me, so she was probably 13, 14 when Tiny Music came out. She got it like right when it came out. And nice. I remember listening to it, and it had Big Bang Baby. That was the lead single. But I didn't critics dog this album?
They did at first.
They did, yeah. Yep. So I think that almost kind of turned me off on it. I haven't listened to it in years, so maybe I should revisit it. But my first inkling is Purple out of these two.
If I'm reaching for an STP album, and these are on the shelf, it's Purple. But I do want, I'm with you, I want to go back and re-listen to Tiny Music, because there was, I loved Big Bang Baby. I loved it. Yeah, no, there are some good songs on there too. So it's probably worth revisiting for those.
Yeah, all the singles are good. Lady Picture Show, Tripping on a Hole in a Paper Heart.
Yep. Tripping on a Hole in a Paper Heart's a great song.
Yeah.
So that's a tough one. That's a good one, Ted.
That is a good one. I listened to Core recently, and I thought to myself, some of these riffs could be off a Rage Against the Machine album.
Mm-hmm. Core's great. I mean, Core is the first album I heard, the first album most people heard. What were we, 93 that came out maybe? 92, 93?
Yeah.
It was 92, yeah.
92, yeah. I mean, we were 7, 8 years old. Like, that's...
yeah.
But I remember that being... Those are albums that you found when you were that age, if you could get your hands on them. We had a buddy of mine growing up, had his dad was big into alternative rock and had like Tool's Enema, and we had Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness as 10-year-olds, and we had this Core, we had Tragic Kingdom by No Doubt. Like, we were listening to music like that when we were 9, 10, 8, 9, 10 years old. Core sticks out for me for that one, and Core is probably their best album.
Yeah, I was just looking at the track list, and it's like Naked Sunday Encore is actually my favorite STP song. So no matter what, Core kind of obviously has a place because of that one song and just the whole album, but that song's badass.
Well, we just had an album anniversary on the Instagram, or the a show anniversary, Nate, that we saw them at Hampton Beach in 2011, so 9 years ago this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And they had a big live stream event with Nugs.net where did they play Core live? They did, I think, this past weekend. And they put the shows from or one of the shows from that weekend in 2011 on Nugs.net to listen to. So that was pretty cool to hear those things again and see them still. I mean, that album came out almost 30 years ago, and they're doing a live stream event for it in 2020. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was cool that they chose, out of all shows, the Hampton Beach Casino New Hampshire show.
We were so close to not going.
Yeah.
Nate lost the tickets. Nate, what, you walked down the street to get something at the store and the tickets fell out of your pocket?
They literally fell out of my pocket. Yeah. And so when it was like time to go to the show, I was like, oh my God, I don't have the tickets. So
I was going to pick you up. Yeah. And you were like, dude, I can't find the tickets. And I was like, you're fucking with me.
So I retraced my steps and they were just on the ground where I walked by. I'm like, wow, I was fortunate.
But you had called Ticketmaster and everything.
Actually, you know what? So to make it feel a little bit better, I called Ticketmaster and they said, don't worry about it. If you lost the tickets, go to the venue and they'll print you new ones just based on your confirmation email and everything.
Which
so
is
you're actually.
And this is 9 years ago. That's pretty badass.
Yeah. So Ticketmaster, we can give them like, you know, one nod for that.
The only nod. The only nod they get. But we would have been able to go to the show. And Hampton Beach for us is like an hour away. So we didn't want to drive all the way down there if we couldn't get in.
Like, yeah,
we probably, although knowing you, Nate, you'd have found us a way in.
I would have got us in some
back door.
That was a great show. That was an awesome show. And in fact, in the write-up, we said that was our last time seeing Scott Weiland with STP, which alludes to obviously him leaving the band or getting ousted of the band, and then seeing him solo before he unfortunately passed away. So
yeah, we saw him in Portland with his band and
the Wildabouts.
Yeah, and he was not as good. And not as good a way as he was the night he was with STP. Like,
yeah,
he just, it was a different situation altogether, unfortunately. And we all know how that ended.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Dour note. Let's move on to the next question. Huh?
I was going to say Ted's is a 2-part question.
Oh yeah. You want to listen? You got that one to one, or do you want to do it, Nate?
I'll say it. Yeah. This is the second part. So again, Ted in Michigan asks us, if you were an artist, would you rather create greatly crafted music that maybe isn't broadly popular, or very popular music that isn't advanced musically? Great question.
Yeah, I'll go first on this one. I'm going to go with greatly crafted music, which I don't want it to sound like too obvious because obviously we're all music fans, but it's because I've found so much music like this that's like obscure, you know, not super mainstream, and it became some of my favorite bands, and they'll never be successful or they'll never be like huge, but it doesn't matter because it's almost, if anything, it's almost like bragging rights. Like, this is like special to me. And when they do tour that rare time, it'll be like in a club, which is even better. So for me, I mean, that's hard. It's a loaded question because speaking of the Spotify thing, like, you still have to make ends meet. So, but even with that, if you're doing it for the craft, I think I would have to stay true to my roots and just say, hey, yeah, I'm just going to do this, even though it sounds, you know, it's not going to transcend to the mainstream audience, but I'm willing to take that sacrifice. So
my answer is depends. And what it depends on is where I'm at in my career and my age. If I'm young, I'm going to have that attitude, Nate, where it's like, fuck the major label. I'm never selling out. But at some point, you know, you may get to a point where you got to realize that you need to make ends meet if that's what you want to do for a career. And then I think a lot of it is a change in the frame of mind that when you do, you know, very popular music that isn't advanced musically, at that point, it's a job. You're filling a role. We always talk about industry plants where, like, they're music actors. So you need to separate it. Like, I think there's still a way to keep your ethos and your roots and whatnot, but you almost have to be upfront with it. Just be like, here's my sellout album, or I'm an industry plant. I don't know. That's just me personally.
This is a tough question because yeah. I think, again, if I'm 22 and I'm doing it, I'm bearing my soul on my music. I want it to be musically superior. I'm not worried about it being mainstream or bastardized by whatever machine it gets put into. Then yeah, that's me. At the same time, as a 36-year-old man that's worked in the rat race for 15 years, you know, you got to make ends meet, and you know, you got to put food on the table and pay for that roof over your head. So I don't fault the people that have taken the check. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, I'm not anti that at all. But at the same time, I think if I had to lean one way, I'd want to be critically acclaimed versus the person who sold out and said, yeah, they were good, and then they sold out, and then I don't want to hear them anymore. I think that's part of what we're doing here. Honestly, if I had to, and this is going to be very full of ego, just because I think we do a good job here. And I think we talk about music in a different way than anybody else I've listened to. And I've listened to a lot of podcasts. We're doing it our way around our regular jobs, and we want it to be what we want it to be. So that's, I think we all do kind of fall in that camp of we're doing it the way that we want it to sound, and it's crafted the way we want it to be camp. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, this is all out of passion. So that's what, if I were to go the music career route, I think it would have to be the same. So, and it's a dicey question, Ted, because asking that question today, you know, versus asking this question 15 years ago, it's a different landscape too. So luckily you're asking it today. So it's, you know, a little bit more viable. So you can do both like we're doing, and still maybe see some success based on the fact that we can get this out to the whole world through the internet rather than rely on, or hopefully sign to a major. I'm putting it in context of a recording artist. Whereas now, you know, someone like Post Malone is self-releasing his music. So, yeah, I don't know. It's a really good question. One band that came to mind when I was thinking the craft, which actually got fairly large, is the XX. I remember telling you, Tone, about them.
Yep.
It's in like, I mean, top five favorite bands, which is a huge statement. They were like, you know, small-time little indie band from UK. And I just liked what they were doing so much that I became like a huge fan and liked everything they did. And it was obviously different than a lot of the music that I like. But that kind of music is like so out there. I'm like, man, I don't know if anyone's going to really like this, but I dig it. And they actually became huge. And like, you know, they're like, you know, one or two below like the headliner at Glastonbury and stuff like that. And went from playing small clubs to, when they came here to California, they played like the Forum. Luckily in San Diego, they played a theater, but you know, they got to the place where they could kind of do both. And I think that's where that my question stemmed from is like, well, they did it. And that's just one example of a band that was like, we'll do it, you know, we'll just do it and see what happens. And they made it. So I feel like the cream rises to the top. And as music, people that appreciate music, we know that, you know, there's a chance. But yeah, it's complicated.
One more thought on that, which is if you are a band that does the former route, which is the greatly crafted music, and then you do go the popular music route, it depends on the artist, but some can seamlessly do that. But what makes me still respect them is when you see them live and they play back catalog shit. If they don't play back catalog stuff, it's like, fuck you guys. Like,
and if it's a paycheck.
Yeah. I think you guys mentioned Green Day last week, or, you know, you were expecting Insomniac and you got, you know, like Boulevard of Broken Dreams 13 times or something.
Something close. Unfortunately, and I loved that band growing up, man. I wanted more. I wanted more.
So good question, Ted. That one makes you think.
Yeah.
And I think for me, it depends on length of time in the game and age.
Yeah, it depends on that way for all of us, right?
Yeah.
All right, Nate, you got the next one?
All right, question from user, Instagram user, P-Luck. His question is, what's a concert that you maybe got forced into going to, but ended up having a great time and became a fan of the band? So this one might surprise some, but I was not a big fan of Dave Matthews Band at all. And then I saw them live and understood what they were doing and became fascinated with their drummer, Carter. And now I love the band. I've seen tons of times live. I have their vinyl. I have a lot of their stuff. And I think they're a fantastic unit, songwriting, musicianship, and everything. But I did not like them before I saw them live. So that would be, for me, Dave Matthews Band.
When was the first time you saw them, Nate?
It was 2004.
So was that down at Tweeter?
Yep.
Yeah, you went the night after I did, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I was into them a little bit before that, and this is just tangent because we're talking about Dave Matthews. But I saw him the night before at Tweeter, and I remember being super stoked to see them, being blown away by the show. Carter is amazing, but they were just such a tight band, and they were like at the peak of their powers in 03, 04, 05, whatever. And I remember you guys going the next night, and at the time you could go on their website and they would post songs as they were coming up on the set list. So I remember being in my bedroom watching the set list you guys were getting and like listening to it as it happened on my computer.
Nice.
Trying to be there with you guys. Like that was my first ever, like I'm digitally at a concert with my friends.
I remember that. Yeah. I think you were texting me like, oh, you got
that
song.
I was. You got songs that I didn't get because they played different songs every night because they care, which was really cool. So not to tangent too much there, but yeah, Dave Matthews is a good one. Do you want me to go next or do you want to go, Twan?
You go.
Queens of the Stone Age.
Nice.
For me. So we saw them, Nate, that we've talked about this, I think, briefly on the pod in the past. We saw them in Boston. We were 20 years old, maybe, at the Royale. Or at the time it was the Roxy, I think, in Boston. But it's now the Royale. And this is 16 years ago. And they were on tour for Lullabies to Paralyze. I liked Little Sister on the Radio. I liked No One Knows, but it was like a band. I was like, oh, I just heard these couple songs, whatever. Like I've heard them a million times on rock radio. I don't care a ton, but okay, yeah, I'll go check this band out because you guys are into them. And stood there and was blown away by the show. And then Nate had been trying to get me into them all along. And I finally was like, yep, I'm going to pay attention now. I'll throw some music on and listen to them. And they become one of my favorite bands. So, go to that show if your friend says, come to the show with me when we get to do that again.
That's a good one because I know how much you are into them now.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I thought about this for me and I haven't been really forced to go to a lot of shows like over the years, but I guess a couple that stood out are in the same genre and they're actually more recent and they're country shows, Brett Young and Chase Rice, two different shows. And I'd heard the names and, you know, my wife likes those. So she, you know, she plays them around the house and stuff like that, but not really thinking much about it. Went to the shows. Great live. Great, great, great live. I haven't really checked them out on record after that, but if they came back, I would go and not feel forced. Country shows are fun. Country
shows.
Yeah,
I would say going to country shows are it's a blast. I've seen Zac Brown a couple, two or three times. But like people enjoy those shows. People that you talk about a metal crowd being into a metal band. It's very similar with country. Like people drink the Kool-Aid and they're really into the lifestyle. They're really into the, you know, tailgating and going to the show and being part of a family. Essentially, it's very similar with country music. And I've seen that live a couple times where it's been really cool to see that. I mean, music is just a great equalizer, right? Like everybody just, they want to have a good time and be outside and listen to music. So it works with country, it works with metal.
And country fans don't care what anyone thinks of them, which
in
a lot of, you know, more niche genres, there's a lot of that where it's, But so those are the first two that came to mind, and I would definitely go to country shows again.
Yeah, it's a good question too, Parker. Thanks.
It is a good question. I think I'm kind of tallying up everything that we're all saying. And it's like, I think we're all realizing that we've never really been forced to go to a show.
Yeah, no.
We're always willing, willing to go to a show.
Parker should know that, right? He follows us on Instagram. We've seen how much stuff have we put up there. All right, am I up for the next one?
To go to Insane Clown. I wasn't forced to go to Insane Clown Posse, right? On that few episodes
back,
but I went.
You went, yeah. And like, I would, if someone said tomorrow, hey, there's a live show down the street. It's ICP. Do you want to go? Yeah. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, actually, I do.
It's music. I'll go.
When do we leave?
Let's just fucking
do this. Are you picking
me
up?
You're driving, right? I want to get drunk. All right. Alicia from IG has our next question. She says, this is a great question. I remember reading this earlier today. How do music charts influence what you listen to? And how much do you feel what an artist does or doesn't do influences that? So for me, the first part is the big one, right? How do the charts influence what you do or listen to? When I was 15, the charts were huge into what I listened to because that's what got played on radio.
Yeah.
And we're now 36 and it's 35, 36. It's much easier to find whatever you want to find and you find things differently that way. But when we were 14, 15, you got a lot of maybe legacy songs on the radio, rock radio, whatever we listen to, but you got a lot of what was popular in the moment, and that was your only way to find music. So charts were big when I was 15. Charts, not at all now. I would say I might pay attention to them because things get mentioned, and I've always had a rule. If somebody tells me, check this out, I'm like, okay, I'll file it away. If I hear it from another source, that means I need to check it out.
I think I'm right with you, Tone. 100%, because it's like I never really paid attention to the charts, but at the same time, like if you're listening to the radio, well, that's the charts, at least like the peak hours and so forth. So I think by fault, maybe I was following the charts, but I never like looked at the charts like, ooh, I should check this out based on these metrics, because a lot of the music that I found was always, you know, someone's record collection or the radio. So they're almost like polar opposites, well, depending on what the artist is in the collection. But yeah, I think I'm in the same boat.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, if I look at this question verbatim, how do music charts influence what you listen to? In 2020, not really. However, it's interesting. So like the metalcore band, the Acacia Strain from Massachusetts, been around for like 18 years. They just put out a new album last week and it charted on the Billboard 200 on like 87. And I'm like, my mind was blown. Like this 20 year band that's been grinding, they crack the 200 and then I'm suddenly impressed. But otherwise I wouldn't care because it's so curated. It's so a product of the machine, but at the same time, I'm so impressed when an independent or an underground artist can get in there. I guess that's when that's when it would influence me, I guess.
Yeah. So you also were already paying attention to them though, right?
Yes. Yes.
So you were just like, okay, good. Other people are paying attention.
Yeah.
Like, that made you feel
point.
Like, yeah, these guys are awesome. And now other people are taking notice, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So that I definitely feel that way when bands that I've been listening to also turn out and turn into something that might be, more popular down the road. Like, oh man, yeah, I found them, or I've been listening to them for a while. Finally, other people are paying attention. So that might be why you felt that way, and that makes sense.
The other thing too is Spotify charts. I'll check those out, like the top 50 tracks in America or whatever in the US. And it's all hip hop nowadays. Like literally, it's all hip hop.
Yeah.
And I will check that out to like, you know, see what's out there. But it's more curiosity and not like, I'm never looking for new music. It's always like, all right, what shit's popping now? You know?
Yeah. Why is this big? Yeah. Mm-hmm. How is this big? Why is this big? TikTok. That's probably why. But yeah, that's a different story for a different day. The second part of her question was a little more. How do you feel the charts influence what the band does, right?
Correct, so, or the artist, yep.
Yeah, so I think it definitely, when we were younger, it definitely was a big deal. They were trying, a lot of bands are trying to write a hit. So they get on rock radio or get on whatever genre music they were in, radio, so they would get more eyeballs and ears and whatever. Nowadays, you're throwing it into an ocean. So
yeah,
unless you've got some big backing from somebody who will promote you, it's tough. Like, I'm not sure the charts are necessarily why people are making music today.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's all about, nowadays it's all about going viral. It's all about having that like repeatable, catchy, like, honestly, if you had a hip hop song and the hook was like, I got money, I got money, I got money, or something like that, that would go viral on TikTok.
If there's a dance for it, especially.
Yeah. So it's like, I'm sure that translates to Spotify charts too. So I'm sure it's all intertwined. Artists definitely pay attention to it. I mean, that's their bread and butter. That's their moneymaker.
Tone, something you mentioned just made me think like it could for sure influence the songwriting. When you think about like movies that you go to see and directors will like take out scenes to get it a PG-13 rating rather than an R. So they sell more tickets.
Very similar.
So it's almost like a Will Smith, like, I'm not going to swear on this album, so I go platinum, you know, and that album did very well for Will Smith, Big Willie style.
Yeah, but I mean, Eminem blew that out of the water, right?
Exactly, yeah. That was, you know, groundbreaking at the time. But
and Eminem rips on Will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will Smith doesn't have to cuss on his records, the raps, to sell records. Well, I do, so fuck him and fuck you too.
Great question. Great questions.
Yep. I do think that the charts thing has changed, and it depends on what you're trying to do. It really does depend on what you're trying to do. If you're trying to put music out there, and it kind of fits into Ted's question from Michigan, right? If you're trying to make something that is for you and is critically acclaimed and you're not worried about charts, so you're not worried about commercial success, then you'll do what you want. But if you're worried about the charts, then you're going to try to make it hooky. You're going to try to make it something that's going to get picked up virally or have a dance to it or whatever. So that makes sense.
All right. This next one, there's actually two questions here. Rick from Maine asks, who would be your dream interview guests? Who do you guys got?
That's a good one. You got one, Nate?
I like that it's plural.
Yeah, I have more than one. I mean, we all would love to have Chino on, right?
Chino Moreno for sure. From the Deftones? Yeah. That'd be fantastic. Yeah.
We'd all love to have anybody from Rage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Any of the bands that we really love.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some that I didn't think were possible until recently.
Yeah.
Like Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam, like doesn't really do interviews.
Really anybody and, like, from Pearl Jam.
Yeah. Jeff, the band doesn't really do press.
Stoney. Yeah.
And Eddie's been on 2 podcasts in the last 3 months. I'm like, holy shit, this is awesome. Cause he's
very bored, man. He's supposed to be touring.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, he's a great interview. He's very insightful. So just fantastic to hear.
So Eminem would be a big one. I think we would all absolutely like talking to him about what he went through to make music that turned into this massive, massive media situation when we were very impressionable as music fans. That would be a really cool interview for us.
Yeah.
And he didn't specify live or dead. Chris Cornell. I would love to talk to Chris Cornell. Yeah. I would, you know, rest in peace. Would have been an awesome person to being in 2 bands that we absolutely love, you know, members of Rage, and then obviously being in Soundgarden, seeing both bands when he was alive on tour with Audioslave and with Soundgarden. That would have been a fun one to talk to. And coming up in the, you know, Seattle grunge era.
Yeah, get it direct from the source. And we got it from Lance, from the photographer, so to get it from the artist himself.
I love Lance. Lance is great.
I can't even remember if I told you guys this story that I did a fake interview with Cornell backstage at the Irving Plaza in New York City. I might be through your text.
I've seen the picture.
Yeah.
I've seen a picture of you and him, but you did a fake interview with him?
I don't even know what that means.
It was a very almost famous moment. Yeah, as we snuck backstage at Irving Plaza in New York City. post show meet and greet. Didn't have the meet and greet pass, got there anyway, or backstage anyway. And then I think I was like last in line. So I basically like jumped in line, and then they were like, all right, meet and greet's over. And I somehow like finagled a way to say I have an interview scheduled. And that's why that's why the photo's in a dressing room. It's just me, him, and his manager. So I just made me think of that when you said that tone to interview Cornell, because I actually did, but it wasn't real.
That's great.
That's amazing. That's an amazing story. I didn't know that. I've known you for fucking 25 years.
I should have saved that for a segment.
Oh, yeah.
So for me, the first person that came to mind, and this, I'm saying this person not for the obvious reasons, but Henry Rollins, not because I'd want to learn about him. I mean, his whole life is on display. I have probably 12 of his books on my bookshelf. Reason I picked him is he's such an egomaniac, self-centered, stubborn dude that I would want to see what type of interview us collectively could get out of him.
That's fair.
If we could like push some buttons in a positive way to make him vulnerable, or I don't know. He's just, there's some good stuff if you go on YouTube, but then there's some others where he's just like, he's got a wall between him and the person he's talking to.
He's just out.
But I'd be curious to see how we would do with someone who would fight us with every question.
Yeah. That and that's going to happen, I think, at some point. It hasn't happened yet. We've had great guests. We've been very, very, very fortunate. Everybody we've talked to has been super cool, and it's been a blast to do those. I never would have thought at my age and music fandom that I would have turned into somebody that might be able to interview some people. So to have this question come about is pretty cool. Henry Rollins would be a good one. It would be fun to try to like push those buttons, because we've done it a couple times where we've been able to push a button or two and get somebody to open up a little bit.
Yeah.
And even in our first interview with Mark, the first half, I feel like we're clunky as hell, but we hit a note at some point halfway through and we all were like, this is awesome. Yeah, we were all totally. Like, so into it. So it would be cool to find that again. And we'll just keep trying here. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Tuan, what you said kind of parlays into what Tone said with the Eminem interview, because he's done interviews. But if it was us three interviewing Eminem opposed to like a Rolling Stone or some major guy that works for Apple, things like that, you know, that do interviews, that you're just like, oh, they're kind of like dry questions. They're not super insightful. They're not super nerdy. And so we would bring it and maybe get some stories that no one's ever heard from Marshall Mathers before, which is, you know, huge megastar. So I think we bring something to the table that is just from the heart. Like, we want to hear these questions that maybe we shouldn't even be asking, but if you're willing to answer them, great. So Henry Rollins, Eminem, those things. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, for us, it's always questions that like we want the answers to. It's not like, what do we think really anyone else wants to know, you know?
Mm-hmm.
What was your process for writing this album? No. We want to know, hey, your bandmate was really good at Miss Pac-Man. Like, how did that come about? That's the type of stuff we're going to ask. Good. That's a good question.
That's a great question.
What was the second one? He had another one?
Yeah. So second one, it says, can you name off the countries and states you have listeners in?
We can. It might take a while.
Yeah. And I think, Tone, you kind of teased this one earlier.
Yep.
So we can just give a count. So,
37 states and the District of Columbia, which is DC, and then 28 different countries, counting the United States and Puerto Rico. So, yeah, I have a couple of maps in the studio here, the map of America and the map of the world, and I've been filling them in as they come in, and it's been awesome.
A lot of fun doing that.
And then I send you guys pictures. I'm like, check this out, guys. This is another, like, the country of Russia, which is half the globe, has listened to us. So yeah, pretty cool. And we're on every continent except Antarctica and the North Pole, which is pretty crazy.
Actually goes into Alicia's question on the charts. We do pay attention to those charts.
Yeah, we want to know where people are listening from, and Anchor does a great job. Spotify does a great job with that. So
it is cool. I mean, just the way you can break it down to location, I almost think age,
male or female, or female. City. We've got a lot of cities. Like, I know what city people have listened to us from. That's pretty cool.
I mean, obviously, it doesn't have metrics of like how anyone found you or whatnot, but that would be cool too, whether it was Twitter, word of mouth, Instagram, yep, charts, you know.
YouTube, who knows?
YouTube, yeah. Yep. So we're good question. There. We do, yep, pay attention to it, and it's a lot of fun to look at that. It is a lot of
fun. All right. Who's, am I reading the next one?
I think it's Nate.
Oh, Nate. You got that one?
Awesome. Christian in Maine asks, put together a dream band taking members from various bands. I feel like I've done this so many times in my head. It's a great question.
Me too, yeah.
Let's see here. I'm going to go drummer, Danny Carey.
Damn you.
Sorry.
We all love Danny Carey.
I'm going to say guitarist, John Frusciante of the Red Hot Chili Peppers. Just those two together would be amazing. I'm going to say bass player, Les Claypool from...
Nice. Nice.
Yeah, Primus fame. And then vocalist, I've gone so many different ways with this one because...
It could be many. I mean, it depends on your mood, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's why I always try to like find someone that's versatile, like Cornell, that can do so many different things.
Yep.
So yeah, I'm going to say Cornell, actually.
That's a great... You get this, like, that'd be a cool band.
Insane supergroup, yeah.
That'd be a cool band.
There'd be some funky time signatures with that lineup.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, between Danny Carey and... Yeah.
Danny is just so damn good. Like, he's an alien on the drums. Twan, you want me to go?
Yeah, you go.
I would have also taken Danny Carey, but shit, I'll take Max Weinberg.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw Max Weinberg in there from the E Street Band. Bassist Flea, because you didn't take Flea, and how do you not take Flea? I love Flea.
True, Flea's great.
Shit, guitarist. That's going to be really hard because there's so many good guitarists. How about Max Weinberg, Flea, Tom Morello, and Trent Reznor? How about that?
Ooh, that's great. Wow.
Think about that band. What would they do?
They'd be upbeat with a downer front man, right? Although he can get up.
Yeah, he does both.
Yeah.
That's why I think it could be a lot of fun. And I mean, Max Weinberg's been the drummer for the E Street Band forever and on Conan. And I mean, Bruce has his upbeat moments and Bruce has his downer moments. So he would fit in with that. Mm-hmm. Just Morello brings an energy that it's just craziness. Flea also, like, put Morello and Flea in the same band. What are you going to get from music? Like, it's just going to be everywhere.
That's true. Morello actually played with Weinberg too. And Bruce Springsteen, the E Street Band, played Australia and New Zealand shows.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that would work. Yeah. Nice.
I mean, and guys, any day of the week, this changes for us because there's so many musicians we love.
Totally. Yeah,
true.
And actually, that's kind of why this isn't a cop-out answer. It's just where I landed with it because I couldn't, like, pick, really.
Yep.
So what I thought about was, what's a band where, like, I love the instrumentals? And I came up with Rage. So Morello, Wilk, Comerford. So then I thought, all right, if Rage breaks up, and they want to form what ends up being Audio Slave, who would be a badass front man to throw with Morello, Wilk, and Comerford? Mm-hmm. And I thought of Chino. Throw Chino on that.
Ooh.
And it would, I would pay.
It would rip.
I'd pay $500 right now if someone told me there was a hidden Audio Slave album with Chino. I'd pay $500 right now for it.
Can we email them and just say, hey guys, you're welcome. Do this.
Try this out.
Do this right now.
That's great.
That would be badass.
Chino fits that versatility in a frontman slot, which is great. And the Rage Against the Machine thing, I was thinking, I think, wasn't there some mashup with like Rage Against the Machine and Eminem? And it sounded really, really good too. I don't know if you guys heard that.
No.
I didn't. It was something like that. I think it was Killing the Name. But, yeah, they have a great Rage Against Machines. Just such an amazing rhythm section.
Yep, that's all three of those bands would be badass. And then again, ask us tomorrow. Like, I might have picked Corey Taylor as my front man. Like, I don't even know. Like, it could have been anybody different.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Good question.
I mean, I could have picked Tom Petty or Dave Grohl. I could have picked Dave Grohl to drum. I mean, who knows?
Oh yeah, true.
So many opportunities, so many bands there we could make. Well, that could be a segment down the road where we just make supergroups.
You know what? You just pick Grohl for everything.
Yeah, Grohl could play everything. He really could, though. He did it on the first Foo Fighters record, so.
Yeah.
And most of the second one.
You can almost do all it right. by style of music. Then it gets really, really complicated.
We could, you know, actually, if you break it down into style of music, it might be easier to do that as a segment, too. So true. You guys are hearing a production meeting on air right now, but that could totally happen. Like, we just go metal and we just make metal bands out of supergroup metal bands, or we go alternative or whatever, stoner rock. We do it that way. So, yeah, that could be a lot of fun. We'll be ready for the next one.
Yeah, let's do a few more. Yep.
Janik in San Francisco. I don't know if I said that right or not. It says, what's the group's favorite band that falls into that summertime reggae type genre? I think he means like 311 or Slightly Stupid type of stuff, maybe.
Yeah.
For me, it'd be 311. That would be it. I was listening to Transistor today in prep for tonight, and I had all the windows down, was blasting Transistor or Prisoner, and it's like, this is freaking awesome. Like, this, it's 90 degrees out. This is a summertime. I feel like the sun's going down. I should be at an outdoor venue, and they should be breaking into this guitar riff right now.
Yeah.
How about you, Nate?
And San Diego is like notorious for like this style of music, right? So before I even moved here, actually, when I lived in Florida, I got into Slightly Stupid. So You Just Set It Tone. I feel like that would probably be the one, at least like initially. There's a lot of other ones, Iration, like all sorts of different bands, Sturdy Heads and stuff. But Slightly Stupid, I've been a fan of longer, and they're from Ocean Beach, San Diego, which is kind of a homage to SD. There's a ton. I think that one would be the one, though, Slightly Stupid to start.
We saw them, Nate, right? They opened for Atmosphere in Boston.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. We like tooled around Boston for a day. We did that a couple times, actually. We tooled around Boston for a day, then saw Atmosphere or whoever.
For me, I think, you know, the Sublimes, the 311s, the obvious pick. And then you have Revolution. Are you familiar with them? Yeah, I remember throwing them on Spotify, like Outback Grilling last summer, Revolution Radio on Spotify. I'm not too versed in this genre, in like the modern stuff, like Slightly Stupid and Dirty Heads. I don't really know too much about them, but Long Beach Dub All-Stars, you could throw them in the mix.
Sublime's a good one, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they fit that, and it was it felt like outdoor summertime vibes when those songs came on.
Mm-hmm.
So that works.
Good question, and very topical, given the summer right now.
All right. I think we got a couple more, and they're from our buddy Chip.
Yeah, want me to get into this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, so Chip sent us hit us up on the email with this one, and I'll read it here. So it says, how do you find new music these days, and do you have any good discovery stories? Growing up, I heard new stuff on local radio stations or at the record store. While record stores aren't around as much, and traditional radio is pretty bleak, Sirius or Pandora, after a while, are pretty generic. After once in a while, I'll get something recommended from Apple or Spotify, but that's a pull and not a push. It takes effort.
Yep.
One great way I've found stuff recently is some of the big festivals we'll go to, look at the bottom line in small print and check them out. I've discovered Grinderman, Frank Turner, Ghost, Fiddler, Slaves, Dracula's on the small lines of the festival poster in recent years, and they have become favorites. The headliners are exciting at a festival, but the small print bands have surprises. This is one of the most nerdery questions that I just kind of geeked out on just reading
it. It's so perfect. Yeah.
How about one of you guys go first? How do you find new music these days?
I mean, I'm going to agree with Chip, because that was my strategy for a long time, because I was having a hard time finding stuff that I dug. And then I was like, I started going to festivals, in particular Bonnaroo. And like, I was, you know, there was a time there, 2007 to like 2010, where the lineups were pretty sick for headliners, but the small bands, I didn't know, and I would check them out. And sometimes it was proactive to check them out before the festival and found all sorts of good stuff. I think that I could go with Chip on that one. That was kind of the only way that I knew for a while. And this was, you know, like I was saying, 2007, 2008, there wasn't a whole lot of ways to find music. I think Pandora was going, so that might have been one. And Pandora was great for a little while because they'd recommend stuff, and then they started adding commercials, and it just got annoying until you had to pay for it. I'm with you, Chip. That's a great strategy.
You guys are a big influence on me as far as this stuff goes, and have been for a long time. Like, it's not just a since we've started the podcast situation. For me, it goes back to us being sophomores, juniors in high school, hanging out at our lockers and it's putting out, giving out each other their, our CD binders. Nowadays, I listen to a lot of the like For You added to an artist. So I'll be in the middle of listening to an album that I love and I'll get towards the end of it and scroll down to the bottom and say, oh yeah, it sounds like this, and try to find some stuff that way. And that's how I found a couple of bands recently. One of my favorite groups growing up was Atmosphere, and I found them the same way Chip did. Walked into a record store, they were playing the album over the loudspeaker, over the speaker system, and I was like, that's cool, I'm gonna go buy a record right now. So I'm open to that stuff every which way you can find it. The radio is just, you know, the way it used to be, and now it's not the way I do it. So it's more like trying to find it on my own, and it is a lot more work than it used to be to find things, because everything's now curated by you, and it's hard to find those things organically unless you've got friends that also are into different music and throw stuff at you, which you guys do, so that helps me a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to think of my evolution of finding out bands, and it was always liner notes, and we've talked about that a million times, and that's, you hear a ton of people say that, like in the thank yous, say that that's how they found out, but like, no, that at least for me, and I know you've said this tone too, and I'm sure Nate, like, yeah, that's how we found out a lot of bands. I would say nowadays it's Spotify's Fans Also Like, mm-hmm. that tab, Reddit, believe it or not. I mean, for every genre of music, there's a subreddit, metalcore, hardcore, you name it, every subgenre going. It used to be message boards. There were a few niche message boards I used to go to, but now it's all on Reddit. And then shows, I mean, obviously not this year, but shows and festivals. Like I went to Life and Death Brigade Fest in Louisville, Kentucky back in February, the last live show I went to. And there were a couple bands that I was like, damn, these guys are badass. A couple of them being Drain and Dare. And Revelation just signed them, both of them, in the last few months. Like it was, yep. it made sense. And I wouldn't have checked them out if I didn't see them live.
And we reviewed that Drain record when it came out a couple months back, and that's a good one. Yeah, that run rips. That's a cool album.
80s thrash.
Yeah, vibes. Yeah. And I like, that's not my lane typically. And I was like, these guys are cool. I mean, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I get it from you guys for the most part, and other friends too. But like, we talk music all the time, so it's very easy to get new music. You know, we all three of us come at this differently, which is why I think it works. And why we have different, you know, viewpoints on that stuff. So it's easy to give each other different music and be into, you know, be open to new music and do that type of thing. So, yeah, what do you think, Nate?
Yeah, I think, you know, between the festivals that I've gone to, like shows you were talking about, Twan, I've discovered a lot of bands that usually, there was a time where I skipped the openers. It was just like, whatever, here for the headliner. I started changing my tactics there and going early, mainly to get a good spot, and then by default seeing the opening bands. And then some of those bands became like huge for me. You know what I mean? Like OAR, John Butler Trio is opening. I don't know who John Butler Trio is. Checked out on John Butler Trio. Oh, John Butler Trio is actually really good. Going to see The Head and the Heart. There's three bands opening. The first one was Mount Joy. It's like, I guess I'll check this out because I'm already here. And now Mount Joy I love. So a lot of it is, you know, that work that goes into, you know, putting in the time, I guess. It feels a little bit more organic that way than having something like Spotify telling you that, you know, other people like this. But that does, unfortunately or fortunately, that does work, because I've found a lot of music that way as well. So it's kind of a mix of different things, whatever works.
When there were more music podcasts that I listened to, again, like I said a little earlier, if there was somebody had mentioned an artist or an album that I should check out, I filed it away. And then if another person on another spot said the same thing, I told myself, two's enough, I need to check it out.
Yeah.
So that was another way for me. If there was a couple of different outlets that threw at me, check this band out or check this album out, you won't regret it. That's kind of how I found the Menzingers, was listening to, I think it was called Encore, was the podcast that Jason Tate used to do for Chorus.fm, Absolute Punk. They had brought up the Menzingers a lot, And I never was super into them. And I brought them up to you, Twan. You were like, yeah, check them out. They're cool. So that was two places. All right, time for me to check them out. And I did. So that was kind of my rule for a long time. And it still is. It's just this less music podcast out there today that kind of scratched that itch for me, I guess.
When Nate was talking, like, Tone, you, your head went right where mine was going to go, which is a lot of the music news sites. So like Chorus FM, which was Absolute Punk, or the PRP, or Lamb Goat, or Revolver, any of those. I mean, some of those have more mainstream artists, but you can find some gems, especially when they announce like tours.
Yeah.
And they show the opener. You're like, okay, I know the headliner, I know the second band. Who are these other guys, type of thing? So even if you don't go to the show, you still see that you have eyeballs on the band, and sometimes I'll check them out.
Yeah, it's true. Becomes like a name brand recognition type thing.
Yeah.
Well, all it takes is a song or two, and you're like, yep, I'm in. Let's go. Yeah. Let's listen to more stuff.
Great question.
It's a two-part,
right? I think we have time for one more question, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's another one from Chip.
Yep.
I'll close us out here. So Chip says, the listener ends up imagining what the podcaster looks like. Help us out. Who are your band celebrity lookalikes? Or maybe better, which character on HBO Silicon Valley do each of you match? Maybe not in looks, but in attitude. So do we want to take it the first yeah. question? Celebrity yeah. band celebrity lookalikes.
Yeah.
All right, so who do we think Nate looks like?
Doug Robb from Hoobastank.
I would say Doug Robb.
We did talk about this pre. That's why I didn't just come up with that. Nate, yeah, a little bit. Not totally, but a little bit.
It's happened.
I would say him. And then if Zach from Rage cut his dreads.
Nice.
And then there's almost some like Brandon Boyd Incubus early on, maybe. Yeah. Something going on.
I mean, if you're going to be Doug Robb, you're also going to be Incubus. Yeah, Brandon Boyd from Incubus, right?
Oh, man. I was wearing a Linkin Park shirt and someone thought I was Mike Shinoda.
So actually, like, I see
there
that
you go,
now.
With the right facial hair.
I do see
hair,
that a little bit.
Right?
Yeah, I do see that. Yeah.
So if you combine Shinoda, the dude from Hoobastank, Zach from Rage if he cut his dreads, and Brandon Boyd from Incubus, you'd have Nate.
Yep. Yep.
Nice.
We couldn't come up with anybody for me. I have no idea.
I can't really pinpoint
it. Yeah. No. So Twan, Jason Schwartzman. Yep.
That's what I said. So I've gotten that over the years a lot. And it's... Yep. If you do a Google image search on Jason Schwartzman, he looks different in every photo. So there's only some photos where, but he was in Phantom Planet. So that's where the band element comes in there. I don't know if many people know that. But.
It would need to be, I didn't know that, and it would need to be the right photo because you don't really look like him. But like I could totally see if the photo was correct and the lighting was right, someone saying, oh, yeah, you kind of look like him. So that makes some sense to me.
I'll send you a photo where it's like dead eye.
Yeah. But I sent you one of our buddy earlier, and we talked about City in Color earlier today. And you're like, who's the buddy? And I sent you a picture, and you're like, I sent you the one photo where they look the same. The rest of them, they don't look the same at all.
Yeah.
But the one photo where they look the same, I was like, this is the one I'm talking about. You're like, yeah, that makes sense. I don't know who I am.
I don't know.
You want to move on to which person in Silicon Valley might you be? Because we could probably give you. I might be half Ehrlich Bachman. I don't even know.
Yeah. maybe when you have long hair, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the hair's gone. I had a long hair. I had hair. Well, geez, 2 feet. I donated about a year ago.
Wow.
So I actually took one of these earlier today. Which Silicon Valley character are you? And it came back with Richard Hendricks.
Yeah.
So he's the main character of the show and the socially awkward CEO.
See, I don't think you're socially awkward.
Yeah, me either.
No.
You do have a couple of things that fit that, but you're not socially awkward. You wouldn't get up in front of a crowd and puke like he did every time. Like that's
right,
not you.
For sure.
I don't think there's anybody in that show that's Nate.
Yeah, I don't know. I've actually to be honest, I've never seen the show. So,
And Twan, we talked about it in pre. Your music taste fits Guilfoyle.
That's. I'm actually taking another character quiz right now.
Oh, do it. Nice. This is live for you, Chip.
It's 20 questions, though.
Oh, Jesus.
So you guys keep talking.
Post the end date at the post the end thing at the end of it. I'm not even like, I guess maybe I'm a little Ehrlich Bachman. I don't really look like him. I do think he's funny as hell when he's not off his meds. But yeah, I don't know, man. Like, I don't even know if there's anybody in that show that we resemble per se. But yeah, it's
Different TV show. Different TV show.
Yeah, Chip, send us another TV show. We might be able to give you one next week.
Home Improvement.
Jonathan Taylor Thomas right here.
I actually saw, is it TJ Miller? That's the actor.
Yeah. You saw him at Port City, right?
Port City, yeah. So yeah, he did two back-to-back shows, and the opener was his wife, and she was kind of out there, but he was so funny, and I guess...
He's funny as hell.
Yeah, he's super funny. And I guess the second show, he ended up buying everyone in the audience a shot. And that's like when I was at Port City, like it was probably for a comedy show. It was probably like a 300 or 400 cap realistically. Yeah.
Yep.
But yeah, he bought everyone, I think, a whiskey shot.
So I could see that. Awesome. I could see us doing a live podcast where we did maybe two sittings of it. And the second time, me being like, fuck it, let's buy everybody a shot. Like, I could totally be that guy.
Yeah.
That would be me. Yeah. I would do that. Like, I'm drunk enough. Let's get everybody a fucking shot.
All right. So the quiz is done. So Chip, here you go. I am Guilfoyle.
There it is. Yeah, there it is. You don't look like him, but you have the same music tendencies. I would agree.
So the little commentary says, you are an expert at your job. You're witty, salty, and a Satan devotee. No one messes with you except Dinesh, and he'll live to regret it. So that's spot on. Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree. Yeah. We don't have a Dinesh. Do you have a Dinesh at work that does that to you? Well, that was a good one. That was a good one, Chip. Yeah. It makes me think, like, I want another TV show to, like, put us up against to see if we could find that, too.
Yeah. It's kind of fun. That'd be great. Yeah, the questions can keep on coming in. We have more that we're not going to get to tonight, right? So
yeah,
keep the questions coming.
Tonight. We're hitting the...
So if we were Seinfeld, Nate would be Kramer.
Yeah, throws the door open at the last second and comes in, like slides in on his socks. Yeah. Yeah, I'd probably be George. Yeah, I'm not going to lie. Tuan would be Jerry. We don't have an Elaine. We don't have an Elaine. Sorry.
So that was fun. We'll definitely do that again. Probably not for a while, but
yeah, we get hopefully some fun stuff lined up in the next couple of weeks. So I got to get through this weekend and hopefully get married and have that go off without a hitch. And then we'll be back at it next week.
Yeah. You'll be a different man next week.
No, I think I'll be the same.
Yeah. That's good.
With a ring on my finger.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think collective thank you to everyone that's listened to date. I know we rattled off all those countries and states and whatnot, and everyone that reached out with a question. It's pretty badass that we could even pull off an episode like this. So I appreciate everyone checking us out. And those are great questions. Really got us thinking.
Yeah, I almost felt like stumped on a bunch of them. But really dove deep into the nerd bank for sure.
Yep. Always fun to hear from people that are digging what we're doing too. So, again, if you want to hit us up on any of the platforms at PodioSlave on Twitter, at PodioSlave on Instagram, and then PodioSlavePodcast@gmail.com. We took questions from all those places today. So we hope you guys will continue to hit us up on any of those platforms. We're pretty responsive there. So please do.
Yeah. And like Tone said, we got some cool stuff in the works and
don't want to jinx it
and won't hint at anything, but we're trying to cook up a few things.
Pretty excited about the next couple of weeks. Not going to lie. If things come together, you guys will be excited too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was wondering why you were downplaying it, but now I understand.
No, we don't want to jinx anything, man. We're just three dudes that grew up together that enjoy doing this. So
we want it when they're
here, we'll talk to them and then we'll put it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks, guys. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Thanks all.
Peace, podheads.
Cheers, everyone.